Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for joining another Dropped Her podcast, being recorded right here in our very own pod in the dutiful Blairgowrie in Prestshire. So we've got a lovely day for it today, and I'm joined by our sales director, John Johnson.
Morning, Kira.
Morning. And our head of business development, Will Jones.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So today we're going to be talking about building trust in products. And so we're going to cover a real general discussion around new products, existing products, what we think some of the key stakeholders should really be looking for in terms of how they can trust the products that are out there in the market. Sound okay?
Sounds good to me.
So, I mean, what do we think? What kind of trends are driving new product development at the moment? Think about Proctor. So, I mean, what trends are driving where we're taking our products right now?
I think one of the key drivers is energy efficiency. You know, the types of houses and apartments that are being built now, people are looking to save their cash. They're not looking to spend it on electricity, on gas, on water.
We know how expensive that is getting these days.
And increasing, and always will do. So looking at the holistic approach onto a building, what we call HAM, heat, air and moisture management or movement within a building, it's trying to understand what products are there, why they're there, what accreditation they've got, where the products are manufactured. Again, a lot of carbon footprint with products coming in from all over Europe, products from all over the world, in fact, coming into the UK now. And it's understanding what their purpose is, what they're required to do, how easy they are to install, and also what benefit the client has at the end of the day. Because more and more people are looking at shows. We were at a show there last week, and the amount of people, not just males, but females coming on the stand saying, look, we're building this new house. They're looking at the energy efficiency of buildings. They want to know about this. So membranes are key to make sure the buildings aren't swearing. We're getting more and more airtightness in buildings. From a social and environmental point of view, we need to be understanding what these products can do and that they're being sourced from reputable companies that understand products and understand what they're talking about.
I'd like to thank you, John, for your insightful. I think there's a lot of different stakeholders that are interested in the performance of products and buildings now, and it extends past really couples building a house. You know, I find the next generation of people also very interested in how things perform and, you know, their carbon emissions of a building and, you know, a lot more interest is being taken generally. So I think it's a fair point.
It's not just a new build. We're seeing quite a lot of people asking about refurbishment. You know, a lot of people can't afford to go and spend £300,000-£500,000 on a house, you know, so they're buying up old properties, old ex-council houses and renovating them. So they want to understand, what's the best way of doing that? What's the most cost-effective way? Is it external wall insulation? Is it internal wall insulation? Is it solar panels on the roof? Is it air source heat pumps? There's so many different options out there. And it's being able to educate them and having their architects understand why they're specifying these products and what benefit they're going to get from it at the end of the day.
The performance gap is bigger, right, from an old house to a new build. So there's a lot more, really, that you have to do there. It's not like you're trying to... Obviously, depending on how old it is, the chances are you're going to need to a complete renovation from the thermal performance of that property to the airtightness of that property, and then onto probably, you know, what's heating that property as well. So, there's a lot more to be done there.
So bringing it back to, so obviously we're talking today about products and how to build trust in products. And ideally what we want to do is, from our experience, share a little bit with maybe specifiers, contractors out there around how they make decisions. And there's so many products out there. How can they actually either know or assume that a product is trustworthy? So, I mean, what are some of the areas you think that makes a product itself trustworthy?
One of the most important one for me and from my experience has probably been the longevity of a product on the market. How long has it been there? How many people have used it? And also, you know, and what's the working with and for good feedback on the product. You know, how well it's been performing, how many problems there have or haven't been. And there's nothing better than actually sort of using a product in the field and understanding and then building trust in that product. So that's probably first and foremost for me, your own experience. I mean, yeah, you could then look to certification of a product, third party certification, which can sort of provide confidence that the product does what it says it does and can be used in a certain application. But you're probably still going to, obviously, not fully appreciate the product until you've tried and tested it.
Yeah.
I feel that's probably the most important thing.
That's a good point. I mean, what's on paper is one thing, and having feedback from the end user is, that's critical, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, another key point there, you're right. And you're right on the certification, well, longevity of a product. You know, it's been in the market for a while. But you could have the best product in the world, but if it's installed wrongly, people are never reminded for the great things they've done and the great projects they've been working on. It's always the bad one that seems to hit the press. So with having likes of with us with Proctors here, you know, we're having the business development team, the technical team, we can go on site and we can show these people how to install the product so it is being installed properly and they do appreciate it. We see that with quite a few of our products where the contractor will use it, and once he's been trained on how to install it and fully understands it, when they go on to the next project, they're coming to us saying, go and speak to these architects and try and get your product used here on this new project, because they trust it. They like the training they get from us. You build that relationship from them and with them, because people buy from people.
Yeah, I think after sales actually shouldn't be underestimated. It's really important. I think it's a key factor to sort of building relationships with your customer base. And we're in an industry where we're not necessarily dealing with directly with the people that are installing the products in the first instance. You mentioned obviously there about specifiers, Kira. They're not going to be the ones that are installing that product necessarily, maybe on a self-build on the rare occasion. But if we're talking about the larger projects, we're dealing with architects and designers at the early stages, then we might be dealing with the main contractors, and then we'll be selling through a route to market normally for a merchant or a distribution outlet. And we're not dealing direct with that installer. So having that communication and that after-sales care really does show that, look, we trust our product. We're going to come to site. We're going to talk to you about it. We're going to guide you through the process if needs be. And if there's anything that you need further support on, we're going to offer that. We're not just selling it and moving on to the next.
I think that's a really good point, because often if you're looking at materials that are available in the industry, you'll have a general kind of cost life cycle of that product. So you'll have a return on investment based on the performance of it. So it may be that it offers better energy efficiency. Let's assume it's, you know, an airtight membrane, or perhaps it's an insulation product. But I think your point, well, both of your points around the installation, having that link with the installer is very important, because your return on investment on a product that you choose, if it's not installed properly, then it's not going to be fit for purpose. Therefore, you're not going to see that value. So I think education around how things are installed is really very important.
It also allows you to get feedback from these contractors and installers, because if they're installing a product they don't trust, they don't like, the chances are they're going to pick up the phone and ask you, you know, what do you think of this product? You know, we know we've used your product. What do you think of this product? What's the features? What's the benefits of it over your product? You know, and it can come down to certification. There's a lot of products coming into the market now, Me Too copy products, which don't do what they say on the tin. You know, people look at them and they think, oh, that's a good one. Yeah, it's a bit cheaper. But is it really cheaper in the long run if it doesn't meet building regulations? And we're seeing that daily on products that are coming in that don't actually meet building standards and still being purchased.
I also think if it doesn't work, or if something has gone wrong, whether the product's been installed, that's the question. Oh, it's a new product, how did it go? And, you know, if the answer is, oh, it's terrible, it's either not giving the performance that we needed, or it's been really difficult to install and we've not liked this, we'll do something different next time, and that goes back to the specifier, that's a big cross for me, you know, and that's, they're going to struggle to sort of justify putting that forward on the next project.
It also gives us a lot of feedback on what's being used in the market. So when we're looking at future product development and future-proofing the business in developing new products, that we understand the pitfalls of some of the products out there. So it just helps keep you ahead of competition. Yeah.
And how do we separate in the industry, you know, innovation and good quality products from sort of marketing hype? Because I don't know about you guys, I see quite a lot of businesses out there, and some legitimately shouting about the benefits of their product. And somewhere, you know, it's a little bit of hot air and they're just trying to promote something which is either, you know, identical or very similar, or perhaps it doesn't do what it says, or it doesn't meet British standards, depending on the application. So how can we try and combat some of the challenges that brings for stakeholders who are making these decisions?
I think it's a really good question. It's a difficult one to answer because, you know, as a company, we pride ourselves in developing products that are fit for purpose. And it's very difficult. It's not really the Proctor way to go out and slag off competition,
right?
You know, give them a hard time. And sometimes you need to, but there's subtle ways of doing that. If a product's come to the market and it's got certification on it, then you would think it should be fit for purpose. But it really dependent on that type of product, the type of application, and more of a system approach. You know, we're seeing more and more systems coming on the market now through Wall. We do a lot of testing ourselves with various products to make sure that they're all doing what they should do as part of a system. And that gives the specifier a lot of confidence when choosing a product or a system or a product that's part of a system, that he understands exactly what that full system is capable of doing.
I think if you have to oversell a product, that would be a red flag to me. Yeah. I've seen that a few times where people want to know the benefits of the product. Why am I using this over what's already being used or a competitor's product or something similar? And it's almost like, dare I say, clutching at straws, or there's, oh, we'll go for it with a fine tooth comb and there'll be a cost benefit at the end, or it might save you X amount of time. And if you're having to oversell or really, really get creative with your USP or your selling points, and I think that's probably a red flag to me, is to probably something that's generally been over-engineered and not going to show you an end-to-end benefit.
Yeah. Or it's using creative language, which actually with CCPI coming in, we certainly, Dean, CCPI accredited very shortly, won't be able to do that anyway. And I think it's, you know, the responsible way for businesses to behave, not to use creative language like the vase, you know, because these things are all easily interpreted, depending who you are. So
I think that's going to highlight a lot of companies and a lot of products in the market. You know, it should reduce the amount of sort of me too and silly claims that there are from some products that are coming into the market, that are trying to tap into what we do and what we've done for a while. And that's, you know, investing a lot of time, a lot of money, and making sure the products are fit for purpose and user-friendly. You know, it's okay developing a great product, but if it's not user-friendly on site, so it's not gonna work. And a lot of that comes back to the skill shortages that we've got on site, and we're seeing coming, you know, forward in the future now that, you know, people don't want to leave school and say, I want to be a joiner, I want to be a plumber, I want to do flat roofing, I want to do slating and tiling. So we're really short on trades now. So developing products that are easy to install is going to be key going forward as well.
And it's funny, coming back to the hype that, you know, is created around some new products, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because the construction sector has historically or habitually been quite slow to uptake new technologies. So it's almost, you don't want people coming in and shouting about their amazing product that does this and it does that where it doesn't. But also we wanted to see some of these really new interesting products that are coming to the market to help solve some of the challenges do well as well. So it's difficult. You're going to have to take it all with a pinch of salt and really do the research, being sure that the products are fit for purpose, that they have the right certification where it's needed, not just because commercially it's a nice to have, but they're meeting the standards that they need to get decent minds. And I think the whole question of fire coming into this now, you know, there's a real duty of care for everyone in the industry, not just manufacturers who are giving, you know, supplying products, but installers, decision makers, specifiers. Everyone needs to know what's going into these buildings to make sure that everyone's safe.
It's a really good point, and I think kind of makes me think of when you look at products which are almost tagged as FR products, fire rated products. What does it actually mean? You know, it comes across as something you think, oh, that's really, really high performing and this is the product I need. But actually, maybe it's not the best possible performance that's out there, or even what's required for a particular project, such as a high-risk building. So, yeah, that's that sort of thing. I think a lot of people jumped on that fire bandwagon a few years ago, and FR became quite a big terminology. We saw that quite a lot on the word fire was being used. And unless you really understood what that meant and how the product had been tested, then yeah, it was quite a bit of a minefield for people to understand.
It's still a big learning curve. You know, we see you and you talk to architects and specifiers and even design engineers, you know, are looking at fire-related products, and, you know, they think, oh, is it Class A? It's Class A1, and that's the best you can get. It's non-combustible. And it's not, you know, it's understanding what these products can and can actually do. You know, maybe A1 as a product, but as part of a system, there's virtually none of them will be A1.
And if you can't get away from that system, that's a good point as well, because, yeah, you can have your A1 rated product, but if you have to install it a particular way and you've not tested it in that particular installation, then what does that actually mean? You know, if you're having to, for instance, tape an A1 rated membrane, then that reduces the performance of that membrane, but you always have to do it that way, then the A1 means nothing.
Yeah.
Because you're not using that product the way it's been tested.
Yeah. It's a bit like saying you're going to get A1 if you put a membrane against Rockwool. So the membrane's A1, but if you put an A1 membrane against polystyrene, for instance, you can't claim that as A1.
Mm.
You know, it's that understanding in the marketplace, and it's amazing how many people don't actually understand it.
So, I mean, how can professionals verify the quality before committing? The other specifier utilizing for us. I mean, because they've been out in Google, they've been in the World Wide Web, whatever you want to call it now, ChatGPT, whatever, and they searched and they found a product and they want to use it, but they are sitting behind a desk and they're not on site. What steps can they take to verify that it's going to be fit for purpose to put on their drawing, invest around their building, whatever?
I guess they're probably a bit reluctant just to pick up the phone or email the manufacturer or the supplier as such, because, you know, they might feel that they're going to get the obvious answer. Yes, of course it's suitable. And ideally, that's not the way we approach things, but anybody should really approach it. You know, you need to understand, we speak about it a lot at the moment, we need to understand the project before we give information on products. We need to understand the application, the project, what the requirements are. I guess first and foremost, you do have your third-party certifications such as BBA, BDA, etc. I think they're important. I think, you know, they're not to be underestimated. People see them as a seal of approval and sort of a bit of a comfort to make sure that a product does what it says it does.
Well, it certainly shows. I mean, I think you're right. I think there's obviously the testing data that goes with it, but it also shows there's a commitment from a business there that this isn't just that let's have a go and see what, let's put our toe in the water and see mm-hmm. if we can sell a product mm-hmm. to the industry, be it a meat or something different. You know, if there's the right certifications in place, and they have to be the right ones, mm-hmm. then there is a cost and there's time and there's a process and there's a long period of time. Sometimes, you know, it could be years.
Or an investment.
Investment, mm-hmm. yeah. So there's certainly commitment from a business to say that, you know, this is what a product does and we are here to sell it, you know?
I think, again, with on that point there is, you know, you look at the timescale and you're right. You know, if you take a BBA certificate, you can be anything from sort of 12 to 18 months to get a BBA certificate. And you're probably talking best part of £20,000-£25,000 to get a certificate for a product.
Depending on the product and what they
use. Yeah, and the application and how detailed it is. But if you take that over that period of time, what we've seen so far in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, these products are changing so quick. You know, you get a product certified and within 2 years, it's maybe out of date because technology's changed. It's changing so fast in the construction industry on lots of different products. Artificial intelligence, you know, we're seeing these 3D printers now printing bricks and blocks, and, you know, it's changing so fast. So you've got to make sure that if you are developing a product that you're looking at the long term, you know, a short fix on it.
I think as well, I mean, I've personally seen a number of occasions where there's a BBA logo on a product and we know the product has since changed.
Yeah.
And that's no longer, for example, the right weight of the product.
Yeah.
And, you know, the BBA is no longer relevant. So I think there's a responsibility when it comes to the decision maker. Don't just look and think, okay, well, that's got certification, tick. It's got a logo, yeah. For example. You need to make sure that what the data sheet is saying marries up with the BBA. And that can be the really time-consuming side of it for some of the decision makers. Because it's very easy to assume that it's all accurate and up to date.
You'd like to think under CCPI going forward, the companies that are doing that sort of thing will be pulled up and checked for that, because it's falsifying really information, which isn't good.
It's probably quite naive of a company to do that anyway. I mean, it's sort of short-term gain, but likely to be long-term pain if you kind of try and mislead the market to say that you've got something that you haven't just because you once did have it, or you're working towards something, but it hasn't quite been signed off yet. I think you have to be very, very careful. And I think you would be very naive to think it'll be okay. We'll drive some sort of interest in a product by keeping something there, or I don't think they shouldn't. So
it just needs a failure in a product that's being, you know, installed, that's got that situation where it doesn't have a certificate, and then someone pulls it, oh, it's got BBA. No, it doesn't. You know, it's like, you know, where does the liability lie, man? You know,
exactly.
Yeah, we've seen it on quite a few. The recent one where one of our products, self-adhered membrane, you know, competitors come out with the product exactly the same, and we lost a bit of business.
we've now retained that business because the stock was falling off the wall. You know, it just didn't do what it said on the tin. And it causes a lot of grief for a client. It causes a lot of grief from the contractor, right back down to the specifier. You know, who takes the blame for that? And I think that the manufacturers need to be more open and need to be more honest on what they're selling and what the capabilities are of their products and limitations.
I think the good thing is, you know, the positive side of things are there are a lot of good certification bodies. There are a lot of good trade bodies to help direct manufacturers and contractors, decision makers in the industry to take the right steps and the right processes. So it's like, you know, all these things are in place and people just have to have that responsibility to make sure they act on them and adhere to them.
I think it offers so much to the market and it might not ever make it simply because the investment can't be made.
Yeah.
And I think there's also a bit of it's definitely something that should be done to sort of support a small enterprise to bring in more products to market. So it's they're great to have. But as mentioned earlier, they're not cheap and they are an investment.
Totally, yeah.
Okay, so I think we've had a good discussion today around how to trust products, I hope. There are a few negative things there. It's given me a lot of food for thought in terms of how, you know, people are presenting products in the market. Obviously, we have full confidence how we do things, but it does make you think, you know, just making sure that everyone that you're communicating with understands. And I think it just comes down to transparency being the most important thing from anyone that's providing products. And then how can you make sure, as you say, that we can cultivate these new ideas coming through from other companies and give them the opportunity to start providing new solutions in the industry? So
I've always said to myself, it's something, you know, since I've been in the business, that if we promote a product and sell a product and I wouldn't use it in my own house, I couldn't sell it. Couldn't sell it.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, welcome. Okay, well
I want to say thank you very much to both of you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, John, and hopefully you can join us again for another chat soon.
Yeah, good, thanks.